so we get going. I don't know if this title, if you look at it, it's really just quite simple, I suppose. One word and three letters, now. And when I was looking at putting the talk together, I grappled a little bit with two words, and that was more like now what, or what now, what now. And the big question for what now was, I think, a bit confusing, because on one side it sounded like what is the next step to do in terms of what now, but I was looking more for the concept of the question, does whatever I want to do need to be in the present moment, in the now? Should I be doing it now? And that was really the thing. So the title then simplified to just the concept of now, and what can you expect in this particular talk? I'm going to attempt at weaving a few things together. First thing is going to be the scriptures that we read in the readings this morning. The second thing is current knowledge. So if we have, or if you have, and I have, a current understanding of how best to live within the influence of time, then we're going to look at some of that. We're going to have opportunities to reflect. What are our personal experiences of time, and how is it currently impacting us? We're going to have a look at some things that have been written in books about time, and we're going to have a few opportunities, hopefully, to reflect on how, at the moment, we are coping. Are we coping well with the dynamic of time? So let's start quickly with just a reflection on the idea of time. I think everybody will agree that there are three broad components of time. We have the past, we have the present, and we have the future. And I remember quite clearly the first time that I was asked to reflect on this, and it wasn't early in my life. It was in my late 20s, which meant that for those first years, up until the age of 27, I'd actually never reflected on the three components of time. I just had this idea of time. And in this reflection, these three aspects of time were split. And the first one we looked at was the concept of the past. And obvious now, I think it's obvious now, but what became clear at the time was the concept that it had gone. That it had, gone, and there was nothing that I could do to change it. And in my reflections of it, I started to see how radical this concept of the past is. Even when I said how radical this concept of the past is, it's already in the past. So it's like this immediate concept of now and then it's gone, now and then it's gone. The second one that we reflected on was the future. And the conclusion that everybody came to through this reflective process was that actually it's a question mark. It's a question mark. We don't really know. And then we got to the present moment, and what was clear in terms of the present moment reflection was that there was just one thing. And this one thing was this word, now. And when we reflected more on the concept of the now, you could almost see how this interplay was happening, that it was now, that was gone, but then there was another now, and there was a now, and there was a now. And if you had this idea of something in the future, you really had to come to the conclusion that it wasn't guaranteed, that you weren't actually quite sure. So you'll be driving later home, but you'll see that you're not, even though you have a certain intention, you're not 100% guaranteed as to how it will go. You just have to be able to deal with the present moment as they present themselves. And then a connection that I haven't clearly made in my life is, and again, I think it's obvious, but the concept of present-mindedness, being present in whatever situation, the opposite would be absent. And I haven't often made this connection between present-mindedness and absent-mindedness, but I think it's obvious, it's probably there. But I'd like you just to reflect on the concept of somebody being present, yourself being present, Can you see it? When you see somebody, can you see it? Can you sense it? And I think that there are many opportunities when you both looking at yourself or the people around you, that that moment where somebody disappears from the current moment, when they become absent in the current moment, actually it's quite clear. It's quite clear. And we use questions sometimes with people, especially if we're close to them. You can kind of go, where did you go? You disappeared for a while. And I think it's quite scary, actually, if you think about it, the concept that somebody disappears for a while. And I think that there's a risk that if you do not become very aware of the now, very aware of the present moment, there's a chance that you could disappear and lose yourself in something which is either gone or something which is unknown. And how often does this happen? How often are you in one of those alternate spaces where the reality is that it's an experience of being absent? Then as I was reflecting, I remember in primary school years, my parents giving me my very first watch. And I know the brand, it was a Timex watch, but what I love particularly about this watch is how it glowed at night. I used to take it to the lamp before I switched the light off and then watch it, because you could see the glow of it, and it was really quite amazing. But the handing a person a watch is, it's the starting point, I think, for your relationship with this kind of concept called time. And I think that again, maybe it's quite a silly reflection, but I've never yet heard anybody asking, what was the time 15 minutes ago? And I've never heard anybody say, what was the time, what is the time going to be in 20 minutes? We always ask the question about time, what is the time now? It's about now. And I think if you were to use the idea of a watch, it really just gives you a little bit of feedback in terms of what is the time now. So as an example, we want to start universal worship at a particular time. It's really helpful, but it's in the now that we want to start it. In previous talks at this temple, I have mentioned, I think a teacher that I had, and some of you might remember, I wasn't aware of it at the time, but my one gran in particular taught me a huge amount, but kind of like sati. I only really realized these things later on in life when I reflected. She spoke using sayings, using little proverbs, and I made a note once of all of the things that I remember her saying, and now I've extracted those that pertain to time. So I'm going to go through them one by one quickly. Time and tide, wait for no man. A stitch in time saves nine, which I've mentioned before when it comes to proactive behavior. Don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today. So you can imagine a young boy growing up in close contact with a grandmother, and she's using these things, these sayings. And tomorrow is not promised to anyone. Now when I googled that one a little bit more detailed, it comes from Proverbs 27.1. And the line there goes, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. And remember the reflection on the future being just one thing that was written on that flip chart. One big question mark. That was what everybody agreed on. And I think at the time she was teaching me about the concept of procrastination. It was definitely in the realm of procrastination. That if you could do something and you needed to do something, Louis, do it now, as opposed to the delay. And then there were a few others. The one was, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Now, again, at the time, I don't think I understood this one in detail. But in my working career and in the work that I've done, I have seen without doubt how people rush into things. How they just rush in, even though when they know something as simple as planning before you start something, people will just rush in. And once they've rushed in and they know that they're not working that effectively, they find it very difficult to stop, because they fear that if they stop, they're going to lose momentum, so they just keep on going, keep on going. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. But now we may have a slightly different opportunity to reflect on that. The concept of an angel, maybe a divine being, the concept of a spiritual, a physical being, you know, life on earth in the material world, and how this may pertain to that relationship, where at a level of physical living or material living, we are literally just rushing from pillar to post. And then the next one that I find quite interesting is the concept of the more the haste, the less the speed. The more the haste, the less the speed. And I don't know if you've ever noticed, maybe on a long journey, as an example, there'll be that car that comes past you at 180 kilometers an hour. And you're doing 120, and the next stop you see it. And then you leave, and halfway after the next time they come past you at like 180 kilometers an hour, you're still doing 120. And what I thought of here is that I think the more we rush around in day to day, the more we are caught up in that frantic day to day behavior, the less the speed at the level of spiritual path progress. And then the last one I remembered was the thing that she said, there's no time like the present. And I think this one was in the previous category around the risks of procrastination. But recently I've just looked at it and taken it a little bit more literally. There is no time like the present. In my early working career, and I don't think it's changed that much, I think it's probably got worse. I remember pretty much everybody that I came into contact with struggling with what we called home-work balance, or life-work balance, but often home-work balance. And these two things seem to be competing all the time. And I think that the reason why it was so crucial is that people were foregoing the concept of home balance to focus on work. To focus on work, and work would almost dominate their time. And even though we knew things like home is where the heart is, hey, home is where the heart is, people used to say, but you know, work pays the bills. Hey, work pays the bills. And that was the dilemma I think that we were all focused with, or always faced with. And then there came this other saying where we link time to money. Hey, time is money. And I had a conversation just with somebody a few days ago where the conversation was going about doing something that would really make a difference, a positive difference. But the but moment, the yes but moment, kept on going back to this thing. Yes but, time is money, yes but, time is money. And I think that you when you reflect on that concept of the physical world, how money is so crucial, it can really get caught up in that at the expense of personal well-being. Money often is related to this thing that we call the ego, and potentially a thing that we refer to as the false self. False self. And when there is a death in a family, I think one of the things that we realize with that unfortunate moment is that that person literally, no matter how much money they have, they literally leave it all behind. Then there's this issue of everything and everyone around us is our teacher. Everything and everyone around us is our teacher. And I've always said that if people are prepared to keep their eyes and ears open, you can learn from pretty much everything all of the time. And there's a client of mine that I've worked with for a long, long time, and they are incredible people because they have this striving for continual improvement. They're always wanting to get better. And it's not necessarily driven by wanting to make more money. I think it's really driven by the wanting to improve. If profits benefit from that, well, then, you know, so be it. But what they've done recently, bless you, what they've done recently is they have gone global. So their company has expanded to the ability where they can provide services for customers that are not based in South Africa. Not based in South Africa. Based in the UK, based in America. And it's an incredible thing for them. But it has brought in a complication. And the complication is time zones. Time zones. So they have a situation now where every customer of theirs that is based in South Africa has been serviced traditionally in South African hours. But now they've got a client in America. And it's a completely different time zone. If you try and look after a client who's based in America within South African time zones, you'll receive a lot of complaints about the level of your service. In actual, people will say you're absent, you're not around when I need you to be around. And I think what this has resulted in, they have to make a decision. They really have to make a decision. Is there a time zone which is primary to us? Or do we have to be as focused in each time zone that we're operating? So is there one which is more important? And I think that they've come to the conclusion that there is not one which is more important. They literally have to be able to replicate everything that they do across time zones. And there's this beautiful saying which came out a while ago, and you might have heard it, but it's that they have to start thinking globally and acting locally. So thinking globally and acting globally. Now, how does this relate to a spiritual being having a physical experience? And I'm going to make the assumption that we all are comfortable with that line. A spiritual being having a physical experience. Do we live across time zones? So do we have our being across time zones? This concept of focus on meditation, breath work, praise, all of these exercises so often are designed to bring us back into that present moment. And if I were to look at this concept of the spiritual aspect of myself, sometimes we refer to it as the inner being, and this material aspect of myself, sometimes referred to it as the outer being. And we want to, as Sufis, be able to live well in both of these zones simultaneously. Is there one of those which has a primary time zone for me? And I think if you look at the concept of soul and the idea of spiritual teachings, I think it is quite clear that you would come to the conclusion that it is all about present. It's all about present. But then if you go back to my gran and you look at the concept of physical living, I think my gran said exactly the same. In life, when it came to my schooling and everything that I was dealing with at that stage, and when it comes to things like work, relationships, I think you would find quite readily that the answer to effectiveness lies in the same word, and that word is also present. I think this is good news. I think it's really quite good news, because unlike the client that's gone global, who has to start thinking about American time zones and South African time zones and British time zones all at the same time, I think if we were to take this moment and reflect on it and make a decision for ourselves, I think it'd be quite good, because I'd go, spiritually it would be good for me to be present, physically it's good for me to be present. But if it is this present moment, then what must I become acutely aware of? What must I become acutely aware of? What takes me away from the present moment? What brings me back to the present moment? And my track record of how present I am, how good am I at remaining present? And then we can just look at this concept of not being present in the realm of two words, problem or symptom. Is it a problem if I'm not present, or is it a symptom if I'm not present? And do I rely too heavily on mechanisms to bring me back? Or should I rather be looking at the root cause? What's taking me away? What's taking me away? What's detracting me from that present moment? How can I remain true at all times in the present moment? Now, in the preparation for the talk, I had this beautiful moment where I just became aware of the fact that I would be able to acknowledge two gifts that I've been given during my time at the Sufi temple. And Hakim, thank you. This one is from you. So I'm going to read a very short excerpt from The Pleasantries of the Incredible Mullah Nasruddin. It's a very short thing. It's called No Time to Waste. Nasruddin ran to an appointment in a nearby town, stark naked. People asked him why, and his answer went as such. I was in such a hurry to get dressed that I forgot my clothes. Now what I like about that little story is that it gives us an opportunity to reflect at a deeper level. In my daily life, what are the things that I forget about? And sometimes if they are really crucial to my well-being, and I remember them maybe after a long time, what has been the cost? What has been the impact to me during that time when I was absent? And what do we forget that is really critical to us in our busyness on a day-to-day basis? For many, I think that work is the big detractor. So work demands, pressures, work can be energy sapping. I think it's worse now that work is not necessarily limited to office hours in the same way that it used to be. Travel demands on people. And also in the workplace, we often have to deal with other people's lack of effectiveness and efficiency. And with this, I thought, in the prep, I actually went looking for something on time. But I found this, and I'm going to read it all to you, the whole thing. And a lot of you will recognize it. But it comes from one of the most beautiful books I think ever written, The Prophet. And the little chapter that I'm going to read to you is about work. And what I'd like you to do as I read this, I would like you to reflect on your current experience of work. And the Sufi temple has always been driven by ideals. I think it's driven by ideals. The ideal is that high, lofty concept, which when we all align with, we all are aligned. It's not at the level of practicality or individual interpretation. It's at the level of ideal. I think this is quite a wonderful ideal. Then a ploughman said, "Speak to us of work." And he answered, saying, "You work that you may keep pace with the earth and the soul of the earth. For to be idle is to become a stranger unto the seasons, and to step out of life's procession that marches in majesty and proud submission towards the infinite. When you work, you are a flute through whose heart the whispering of the hours turns to music. Which of you would be a reed, dumb and silent, when all else sings together in unison? Always you have been told that work is a curse and labor a misfortune. But I say to you that when you work, you fulfill a part of earth's furthest dream assigned to you when that dream was born. And in keeping yourself with labor, you are in truth loving life. And to love life through labor is to be intimate with life's inmost secret. But if you, in your pain, call birth an affliction, and the support of the flesh a curse written upon your brow, then I answer that naught but the sweat of your brow shall wash away that which is written. You have been told also that life is darkness, and in your weariness you echo what was said by the weary. And I say that life is indeed darkness, save when there is urge. And all urge is blind, save when there is knowledge. And all knowledge is vain, save when there is work. And all work is empty, save when there is love. And when you work with love, you bind yourself to yourself and to one another and to God. And what is it to work with love? It is to weave the cloth with threads drawn from your heart, even as if your beloved were to wear the cloth. It is to build a house with affection, even as if your beloved were to dwell in that house. It is to sow seeds with tenderness and reap the harvest with joy, even as if your beloved were to eat the fruit. It is to charge all things you fashion with the breath of your own spirit, and to know that all the blessed dead are standing about you and watching. Often have I heard you say, as if speaking in sleep, he who works in marble and finds the shape of his own soul in the stone is nobler than he who ploughs the soil. And he who seizes the rainbow to lay it on a cloth in the likeness of man is more than he who makes the sandals for our feet. But I say, not in sleep, but in the overwakefulness of noontide, that the wind speaks not more sweetly to the giant oaks than to the least of all the blades of grass. And he alone is great who turns the voice of the wind into a song made sweeter by his own loving. And this last bit is really the key bit that I want to be reflecting on when it comes to my relationship with work. Work is love made visible. And if you cannot work with love, but only with distaste, it is better that you should leave your work and sit at the gate of the temple and take alms of those who work with joy. For if you bake bread with indifference, you bake a bitter bread that feeds but half man's hunger. And if you grudge the crushing of the grapes, your grudge distills a poison in the wine. And if you sing, though as angels, and love not the singing, you muffle man's ears to the voices of the day and the voices of the night. There are a lot of people that I come into contact with that seem to me to be struggling with the idea of work and the impact that is having on their emotional well-being. And I really recommend that that's a chapter that everybody in that space should spend some time reflecting on. So the big question is, how do I remain in the present? And going back right to the beginning on the reflection of time, we had this concept of the past, the present, and the future. And one of the things that comes up when we look at the future is the question of, where do our goals reside? So somebody will say, well, our goals are in the future. But if you think about it differently, I think that you can only conclude that your goals are not in the future. They may have a future date attached to them, like, when am I going to move into my new home? But they actually are with you in the present moment. Your goals reside in the present. In the same way, your ideals reside in the present. And what's so important about these two concepts, goals and ideals residing in the present, is that they are there to guide you. They are there to guide you in each moment of now. And if you can be guided each moment of now, you will be the best version of yourself all of the time. But we do sometimes fall into the trap of identifying with something which is not in the present moment. So you get those people who identify with something in the past. The hurt, the disappointment, the resentment that I'm carrying. And a lot of people I know are living for the future. So they have this thing about, I can't wait for. So you have this want, this wish and expectation. And when all that carrying goes away, when you put all of that down, and a lot of people will think that when that comes, I will be able to smell the roses. But they will more than likely not smell the roses because they're absent from the very beginning. Now, I mentioned this concept of the so-called sense of humor because I think the ego plays a massive part on our ability to remain in the present moment. We worry, we are wanting. Last year, I think I mentioned to some people already that I read a book, and I don't read a lot, but I read a book called The New Earth. Eckhart Tolle, and it deals largely with the concept of ego. And after reading this book, I made a list of all the things that take me away from the present moment. And I'm going to list something. Mine, the idea of something being mine. I and other people, so this concept of difference, other, identifying primarily with the body, identifying primarily with things external to me, possessions and attachment to possessions, better, different, superior, judgment, right, others wrong, defensiveness, wanting, a sense of lack, anxiety over future outcomes, power over others, patriotic, distracted, against something, and also fear. There are more. And just in this, as a side there, the concept of the patriotic, I think one thing that I thought of again, and I think I've made a mention of this a few times, after the talk, Conquer Conflict, is that I just became aware of the concept of if I identify with a particular political view, that I might just be going into the concept of ego. Because we looked at that in that talk, the difference between the unity of spiritual ideals and then everything which is politics. The Power of Now was a book that also is Eckhart Tolle. What a stunning title for a book. Slowly but surely making my way through this. You can see where my bookmark is. 7 months down the line, it's about 10 lines per month. The Power of Now, conscious living, being conscious of living in the present moment, being present, connected through and to breath all the time, and living minute by minute, guided by spiritual ideals. And there's this beautiful word here, be. Be versus one day. Be versus that one day I will become. Be the best version of ourselves now. Guided by what? Guided by current ideals. And then to really just look at what you're doing on a day-to-day basis and going into maybe a bit of a boring concept of where's this going to take me to? Where will I likely end up if I continue along this particular path? And if the answer is not in alignment with that ideal, you probably need to change something in terms of your behavior now. Once you have those ideals, there's this beautiful mechanism that I think all people have, and that is the concept of conscience. How we simply have to listen to our conscience, because our conscience will tell us whether we are aligned or not. And then as we get closer to the end, I think one thing that I did see is that South Africans are probably the most present-minded people in the world. South Africans are very clever. We realized a long time ago that it is useful to live in the now. And we realized that we did not want to live in the future because that wouldn't help us. So we just changed the terminology. So we achieve this now by having the now, and then we also have just now and now. So we're very focused on the now. I just don't know if that's quite the right answer. So think global and act local. What does that mean, I think, for us? Think divine and act physical or material. The time is now. And really just this concept of this opportunity to align both time zones, which is actually useful to be in, the present and the present. Now I want to go through the greetings quickly again. In the heaven world, there is no fear. And think about the ego and fear. Leaving behind both hunger and thirst, and out of the reach of sorrow, all rejoice in the world of heaven. Better one day of insight into the deathless state than 100 years of blindness to this immortality. So long as devout zeal is in the heart, the reward shall be yours. The Lord is nigh unto all them who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. Never let your zeal lag. Keep alive your spiritual fervor. I am commanded to worship God. On him do I call. To him shall I return. Renounce the good of the world. Renounce the good of heaven.
renounce your highest ideal, then renounce your renunciation. By self-realization, a man becomes larger than the universe. The world in which he lives becomes as a drop in the ocean of his heart. In the Prophet, there's also a chapter, a little paragraph on time. And I want to just read the ends. The end of it. But in your thought, you must measure time into seasons. Let each season encircle all the other seasons. And let today embrace the past with remembrance and the future with longing. The second gift that I was given by Francis gave me this little book, and it's the book on the African prayer book, Desmond Tutu. And I think we've heard this at this temple before. Today is God. In the beginning was God, today is God. Tomorrow will be God. Who can make an image of God? He has no body. He is the word which comes out of your mouth. That word, it is no more. It is past and it still lives. So is God. So how do we cope, I think, going forward? Put a little bit of a list together. Slow down, slow down. Turn to the light and away from the darkness of ignorance. Know who you are. Walk, work, sleep, play, eat with God. Know and then live your truth. Stay connected with your breath. Know what will pass and what will not. Rise above what no longer serves you. Tread like an angel. Know that as bad becomes, it's not a part of you. Live with the God ideals of love, harmony, beauty, and unity in mind all of the time. And make the link between you as observer and you as the observed. And then remain in the now. And lastly, there were six big questions that we dealt with months ago in a talk. What? Self-realization across all time zones. Where? Yeah. How? Zeal in your heart. Who? Ray. Now Ray is that thing that we called once, that connection. God on the one side, you on the other side of a ray of light. Ray. Why? True soul happiness, peace, and being at ease. And when? In every moment of now, as that is all there is. There is no time like the present.